I'd like for us to do a little imagining, and you'll see what I'm talking about in just a minute, but I had quite an imagination as a child. I liked to watch war movies, and the Guns of Navarone, and all those, you know, classic, the Bridge Over the River Kwai, and all those things. You know, I loved those movies. So much so, I was still just a little boy when Vietnam was going on, and I thought for sure, if that thing is still going on, when I get to the age to be drafted, I will surely be drafted because I know so much about war. You know, I thought they need my services. And, but that obviously did not come about. I think I was like in fourth grade when, Vietnam, the young men began to come home from that, conflict. But here's what I'd like for us to do tonight, and I want you to participate in this, and I want you to imagine that you're in the army. I want you to think like a soldier would think tonight. Not just any army. I want you to imagine that you are in David's army. And I want you, as you consider being a soldier in the army of King David, I want you to try to picture what must have been going through your mind as you try to figure out your leader. I know that in war, you get a lot of commands that you don't quite understand. Why would they tell us to do this? And why would they tell us to do that? And I'm sure there are a lot of situations like that, but you learn to trust and obey and do what you're commanded, whether you understand it or not. And I'm sure that those soldiers in David's army, us, because we just enlisted, and we've picked up a sword and a shield. And as soldiers in his army, I'm sure there are a lot of questions that we're about to ask. And what I'd like for us to do tonight is to ask those questions and seek answers and then make some applications that I think will be helpful to us. If you have your Bible, you might want to open it up to the book of 1 Samuel toward the end of the book. Oh, we can begin around in verse chapter 17 to give us some context. And we'll be going through probably around 2 Samuel chapter 5. As we just look at a little segment in the life of David as he was commander of his troops before and during the time that he was anointed king of God's people. Ever since David's victory over Saul, we soldiers have known of Saul's hatred of David. Maybe we've even witnessed some of it, or we've heard stories about it anyway. Everybody's talking. We know how they felt about David, or how Saul felt about David. I mean, when David killed Goliath, we saw, as he went down there and beat that giant, what are the odds? It was such a victory for us on that day, and we all rallied in response to David, and we chased the enemy. And man, when we came back to town as victors, boy, the women were in the streets singing praises to David, saying Saul has killed his thousands, but David his ten thousands. We knew right then trouble was going to happen. And sure enough, it did, because you read about this all in 1 Samuel chapter 17. But by the time you get to 1 Samuel chapter 18, that envy in Saul has taken root. And as David is playing for Saul, trying to soothe him, Saul takes a spear and takes careful aim and throws it at David with the intent to pin his hide to the wall. David escapes, he misses, and thus really begins our journey with David, our leader. He is an exile. He's a fugitive. And Saul is doggedly chasing him all over the country trying to find him. And along the way, as David is trying to recover and to flee, he's been picking up people just like you and me to join his army to fight back and to defend his right to the throne. You see, Samuel has anointed him king of Israel because of Saul's sin. But David's on the run. He doesn't have the power. He doesn't have the army on his side. He just has us. And we've rallied behind him. We believe in his cause. He's the leader that God has chosen, that the prophet Samuel has anointed. And so we follow him wherever he goes. And we're basically running right now. The Bible tells us in 1 Samuel chapter 27 that as we are fleeing from Saul, there was twice that David had opportunity to kill Saul. But he didn't do it, and we'll talk about why in just a minute. In fact, as we were fleeing from Saul from place to place, we eventually were forced to, well, David made an alliance with the Philistines, of all people. Don't you know that we would be thinking about that? Well, I don't understand why he would do that. I guess, you know, all bets are off when you're at war. Because he had no army to protect him. He had no nation that was his anymore. He was a fugitive. And so David, our leader, goes to the Philistines and makes a pact with them and agrees to fight with them and have their protection. David, our leader, is quite confusing along those lines, I guess, because here are some things that are said about our leader. And these are just, I'm not going to go through the text, but I just want to give you some things that are said about him. He was anointed. His heart was right with God. He was praised by the people. He was loved by the king. He possessed the spirit of God. He was confident in the Lord. And he was a man after God's own heart. Wouldn't you like to have those things said of you? Those are all things that were said of my commander, your commander in chief, David. But David was an enigma to us because these are also things that were said about David. He's suspicious. He's a conspirator. He's insane. He's a murderer. He was hunted. He was treacherous. He was guilty of duplicity. And he formed an alliance with an enemy, a foreign nation. Those are just as true or at least those are the things that people were saying about him as well. And so as his follower, I'm hearing these messages. I, as a member of his army, I've heard people praise him and I've heard people curse him. And it is confusing. I see why they have said and come down so far on opposite poles, because I have absolutely been, you have absolutely been confused by some of the things that he did. And I want to take you through a few of those things. Twice David spared Saul's life. You remember Saul set him to flight and he would not give up on him. He chased him everywhere. David just stayed a step ahead of him. But on one occasion, David and the rest of us had sought shelter in a cave. We were hiding. And as we were in this cave hiding, David came into the cave. We were in the recesses, in the darkness of this cave. And Saul came into that cave. And if I can put it delicately as possible, to relieve himself. And so he leaves his garment off to the side, and David goes up and he cuts a piece of that garment off, and we're thinking perfect opportunity to get rid of Saul. We're thinking, wow, God has delivered Saul into our hands this day, because here we are. All we have to do is rush out from the crevices and take him, and the war is over. We don't have to run anymore. David can be anointed king or recognized king of Israel. But David says no. He tells us to stay back in the shadows, and he cuts a little piece of Saul's garment, and Saul leaves the cave. And from a safe distance, when Saul was along the way, David goes out and hollers at him. And Saul looks back to where he had been, and there's David, and he's holding the piece torn. He said, I could have killed you, Saul, but I wouldn't raise my hand against God's anointed. That just baffled us. He's your enemy, and you wouldn't kill him when you had the chance. He's the reason why we're out here running around and not home with our families. I don't get it, but that's your decision. You're the king. And Saul must have looked down and said, well, sure enough, that's part of my garment. He could have killed me. And he was shamed. And he went home for just a little while. And then that envy and jealousy began to rage within him again. And he chased David again. And there was one night when Saul had chased David. And he didn't realize how close he was to him. And he went to bed that night. And he stuck his spear in the ground right by where he laid. And had a water jug right next to it. And David took one of his servants and went down there and took that spear out of the ground and took that water jug and retreated. Again, we're thinking God has delivered them into our hands. They had fallen into a deep sleep, the text says. It makes me wonder if God's hand was not in that. I mean, who can just walk into a camp and walk right up to the leader of the camp who had surrounded himself with his people, and they march right up and take and remove his spear? Surely God has intentions of us putting an end to this. But no, David doesn't. He takes the spear and he takes the jug. And again, he gets off to a safe distance. And in the morning, he hollers out again and says, look, I have your spear and I have your water jug. I could have killed you, but I didn't. Those actions kind of baffle us as his soldiers. We can't quite figure out why he would do those things, because if we were in charge, that's what we would have done. Well, that's what any soldier would have done. But David didn't. And as we press forward through the book of 1 Samuel, we come to chapter 30. And this is when David and all of us have formed an alliance with the Philistines. And what in the world? I mean, they've been our enemies. The Philistine king thought, well, if I can get him on my side, Israel will hate him. And there won't be going back. He can't ever go back home. He'll be mine forever. Well, what David did, he didn't really work with the Philistines. He would go out in raiding parties and destroy enemies of God's people, but he would destroy everybody so there would be nobody to tell. And when they asked him, have you gone on raids? He'd say, yeah, we took care of this place and that, but he wasn't really fighting against God's people. And he won a battle, well, on one occasion, because the king of the Philistines, all the men, they didn't trust David. So the king said, when they were about to go to battle against Israel, they said, well, David, y'all go back home because none of my advisors, I trust you, but they don't. They think in the heat of the battle, you're going to turn against us. And so they don't want you to go fight. So you all go back home, sit this one out. And as David and his men, as David and us, while we were reaching home, I don't know which one of you saw it first, but on the horizon there was smoke. And it was rising up over the hills. Pretty soon we all saw it and we got to thinking, that's home. And we hurried and we got to the top of that hill and we looked down in the valley and we saw that our homes had been raided by the Amalekites or the Amalekites. Our wives and our children are all gone. Our possessions, our livelihood, our stock, it's all gone. They were taken from us. And we, with more energy, because of adrenaline, I suppose, began hot pursuit. And we went about 12 miles before we caught up to them. But we caught up to those Amalekites, and we destroyed them. We took back everything that they had taken back. But here's what we struggled with. When we regained all those spoils of war and all the things that belonged to the Amalekites, you know what David did? He went to Israel and he divvied up the spoils back to the very people who were now pursuing him. Israel. Those are the folks, those are our brethren that we're running from. And yet David still, even though he was being chased all over the countryside by these people of God, when he came into this bounty, he went and gave it to those very people. That's hard to figure out. You're aiding the very people that are trying to put you to death. Tells me something about the man that we love. He really loved his nation. And then we come to 2 Samuel chapter 1, and we see another occasion. There's an Amalekite who was present, or at least he says he came upon the dying Saul. You remember Saul is mortally wounded. He has fallen on his own sword. This is David's arch rival and enemy. We thought, what good news. And man, how must David going to, how is he going to repay this guy? And the text tells us that when this man came to David and said, I saw Saul, he had fallen on his sword. And he was in misery. He was in agony. He was mortally wounded, but he wasn't dying, and he begged for me to put an end to his suffering, and so I did. I finished him off, and here's parts of his armor, proving that my story is true. And we thought David would praise him, but he didn't. You know what David did? David took that man and said, who in the world do you think you are? What made you think you could raise your hand against God's anointed? And he had that man put to death. Again, we thought that he would be rewarded. And here David praises, condemns this man who had killed his arch rival, Saul. And then there's that song that he commanded us to memorize. Do you remember it? Look at in your Bibles at 2 Samuel chapter 1. And you get, it's called the Song of the Bow. And David commanded us to memorize it as his soldiers. And it goes along the line, I'm not going to read all of it, but the beauty of Israel is slain on your high places. How the mighty have fallen. Three times he talks about how the mighty has fallen. And he says in verse 20, tell it not in Gath. Proclaim it not in the streets of Ashkelon, lest the daughters of the Philistines rejoice, lest the daughters of the uncircumcised triumph. He went on to say, Saul, in verse 23, Saul and Jonathan were beloved and pleasant in their lives, and in their death they were not divided. They were swifter than eagles, they were stronger than lions. Daughters of Israel, weep over Saul, who clothed you in scarlet with luxury, who put ornaments of gold on your apparel. How the mighty have fallen in the midst of battle. Jonathan was slain in your high places. I'm distressed for you, my brother Jonathan. You've been very pleasant to me. Your love to me was as wonderful, surpassing the love of women. How the mighty have fallen and the weapons of war perished. David said this over the man who brought him more grief than anyone else in his life. As I said when I began, our leader's an enigma. He's hard to figure out. Every move that he makes, he shocks us. He does the opposite of what we would have done as soldiers. And then after Saul is dead, David is now recognized as king. But there's Saul's son who claims to be king. And they have a showdown. Joab, who was David's captain of his army, and Abner, who is the captain of Saul's son's army, they meet up. And I think it's really interesting what is said in 2 Samuel chapter 2. It gives you some idea as to how maybe hardened these men were. Joab said, then verse 14, chapter 2. Then Abner said to Joab, let the young men now arise and compete before us. And Joab said, let them arise. The New King James says compete, but the Hebrew word that's used there is the word for entertain, to put on a show. These two generals say, let's have our guys put on a show for us. Let's have them entertain us. And they fought to the death. And all the others joined in and fought to the death. And one man followed Abner and chased him when David's men began to win. And Abner kept saying, just stop. Leave me alone. Turn aside. Follow somebody else. But he wouldn't. And he persisted and pursued Abner. And Abner took the blunt end of his staff, his spear, and pushed it into that man so hard that it literally pierced through his body. The blunt end. And he killed him. So now David has a new enemy. You've got Abner and you've got Saul's son, Ish-bosheth. Long story short, some men come and, well, Joab, David's captain, laid a trap and murdered Abner. And again, we thought that David would be so happy about that because Joab had just killed his enemy Abner. But what David did shocked us. He mourned. And he followed the funeral procession for Abner as they took him to his grave. He was there mourning for the enemy. And then some other guys took Saul's son while he was sleeping one afternoon. In the heat of the day, they came into his inner court and they killed him and they beheaded him and they brought the head to David. We thought again, well, wouldn't you be happy about that? This is his rival king. David said, how is it that you have done this? Do you not remember what I did to the man who claimed to have put Saul, king, God's anointed, to death? I put him to death. And you bring me the son of Saul? You have the nerve to lift your hand against him? You too shall be executed. And he did. And again, a lot of us would have thought, he would have given some reward to him. But no. David, as a leader, at every turn, did what probably we as soldiers would not have chosen to do. And here's the application that I want to make from this lesson. I think there are lessons to learn about David's leadership. And as we entered his army and saw the way he behaved and the way he responded, I think there are some lessons that apply to the how we should live and respond in the Lord's body, the Lord's army, yet today. And some of those lessons that David taught us when we served under him are these. There's more to victory than just, or there's more to life than just victory over your enemies. David won victories, but that wasn't all that it was about. He didn't find great joy and satisfaction and fulfillment in life when he became victorious. There were things more important to David than just victory. There was honor and respect for God and his appointments. He had opportunity to win victory on many occasions, and he wanted no part of it. And those who went ahead and ran forward and got those victories for him, well, he had him punished. David wanted to be victorious, but not at any cost. There's more important things than just winning. Here's another thing that I learned from our King David, and it's that God's positions demand respect, even if those who hold those positions aren't the best of people. Saul was not a good man by the end of his life. He had made a lot of horrible choices, but at one time he was, and he was still God's anointed. And that caused David to pause. He wasn't free with his accusations. You know, I remember a statement made in Jude when it talks about how the angels were disputing with the devil over the body of Moses, whatever that means. And yet they would not even bring a railing accusation against him. They were even cautious as they were in war against Satan himself. There are positions that God has established in the church that we need to respect and honor, even when we find those men in those positions flawed and imperfect. David demonstrated that. And we also learn from David that sometimes we just need to keep our mouths closed. You know, David told us that the defeat of your enemy isn't necessarily time to go out and rejoice and celebrate and tell everybody you know what happened. David, in fact, said, in the city of Gath, the city of the Philistines, the hometown of Goliath, when he learned that Saul had died, David said, guys, listen, don't go spreading that news. If you tell that, the daughters of the Philistines will rejoice. They'll take pleasure in our pain. Don't give them reason to rejoice. And it disturbs me in the church when we see, and people can be completely wrong, but we have a mindset sometimes that says, boy, I hope they get theirs. I hope somebody sets them right. I hope they get found out and published against, and I hope they get exposed and let the world know about it, because they have been wrong, and we almost rejoice and we broadcast. What happened to that principle? Tell it not in Gath. We don't want the world rejoicing when God's people fail. And then, you know, if I can just close with this last point that we learn, I think we learn how to love. Love your enemies, Jesus said. Bless those who persecute you, bless and curse not. That is hard to do. You know, I've said before, and you've heard it before, but, you know, it's easy to love your enemies until you really have one. And then it's a whole different ball game. It's really hard. But David has shown us, his soldiers, how to love and how to love your enemies. He took no delight in the death of the unrighteous. He didn't use it as an opportunity to justify himself. He didn't use it as an opportunity to broadcast all the things that person had done to him. You know, sometimes when we get hurt, we not only want that person who hurt us to know you hurt us, but we want everybody else to know how that person hurt us. We broadcast. You know how they sinned against me? You know what they did to me? You know how they hurt me? And we broadcast. And David didn't do that. He had been tremendously hurt and mistreated by these people in this story. And yet, he said, tell it not in Gath. I think there's a statement made in James chapter 4 that sums up David's attitude and should sum up ours. And it's easier said than done. But he said this, James did, do not speak evil of one another, brethren. He who speaks evil of a brother and judges his brother speaks evil of the law and judges the law. But if you judge the law, you're not a doer of the law, but a judge. Don't speak evil of one another, especially those who are your brethren. Do we have brethren that need correcting? Well, of course. Do we have brethren that are not living as they should? Well, of course. But it ought not be our aim to rejoice in their misfortunes and to broadcast their sins needlessly, aimlessly throughout the world, not only our brotherhood, but among the world, in a way that the enemies of God might rejoice at our misfortune. James chapter 4 and verse 19 says that we're to pursue the things that make for peace, and whereby we might edify one another. these lessons that we learned as being soldiers in David's army are the lessons that we need to remember as we serve Jesus Christ, our King of Kings. And I hope that though they're difficult, that we will give thought to and try to master these commandments. Our King isn't like other kings. His decisions are not militarily based. He probably does, most of the time, the opposite of what I may have learned as a soldier. But he's the master. He's our king. He's our commander. And it's in his footsteps that we need to follow. If you're here tonight and you're not yet a child of God, why don't you enlist in the army of the Lord? He's a good and just king who will bring victory and give you victory over sin and death. Jesus said, he that believeth and is baptized shall be saved. If you need to do that tonight, we'll assist you in that. And if you're a child of God but unfaithful and you want to come back home and serve him again, we'll pray with you to that end if you'll come as we stand together and sing.